This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Welcome into the Lombardi Line presented by DraftKings alongside three-time Super Bowl winning executive Michael Lombardi. I'm Stormy Bonantoni. We got lots of college hoops and NFL talk upon us as the opening weekend of the NCAA tournament is officially in the books. And we've got the owners meetings going on in Orlando. But Michael, March Madness has been March sadness for a lot of people, including myself. My bracket is donezo, my friend. How are you?
Look, when the 1 and 2 seeds, when it goes off on script, I mean, everybody's can't be perfect, right? Whoever goes into this thing thinking that there's not going to be some kind of upset. So I think I have three teams left. Of course, I was the idiot that took Kentucky. You only took Kentucky for all the wrong reasons. You were right about Kentucky, and then you got scared and put them in your list. But you were right. You should have stuck with your instincts on that one. But, you know, to me, yesterday wasn't. I thought, obviously, the Houston-Texas A&M game was a great game. But there wasn't those compelling games that you thought. It kind of went off. It went on script.
Yeah. And I also think, Michael, I don't know if you agree with this or not, but the second round scheduling, this the way that the games were staggered, I know that they've done it for a number of years this way where you've got kind of those standalones in the morning. But like, I want game after game after game after game. Like, I don't want to have to sit there, and no offense to a producer, Elliot, who I know is savoring every moment of that Purdue Utah State game. But like, let's get something competitive on the screen. Let's watch something else. I don't want to be stuck watching this.
Yeah, and then didn't the Utah State coach leave immediately for the University of Washington? I wish we would have known that on Sunday, right? You know, because his team didn't play as well as you would have hoped, but Purdue was very good. But to me, this is about, you know, Sunday, the tip-off on the San Diego-Yale game, San Diego State, your alma mater, it's 9:40 our time here. That's okay on a Saturday night, but not on a Sunday night when we all have to kind of work the next day. Like, I don't know why we couldn't have doubled up some of those games to get a Sunday more kind of where it ended at 9 o'clock, and then they could put 60 minutes on and go from there. To me, that made it harder, especially with the A&M game finishing. It was an 8:40 tip back here on the East Coast.
Yeah, you feel
it's easy for you guys on the West Coast, but for us, it's harder.
That's what I was going to say. I feel for you and all those East Coasters that were asleep last night when you had the end of the Houston game, because for anybody that did miss it, and I'm sure you've seen the highlights this morning, you have a Houston team that's up 12 with like a minute 50 to go and just mistakes after mistakes, fouls. Like, they had four guys fouled out, key contributors. Texas A&M comes all the way back and forces overtime. Now, the better team prevailed in OT, winning 195. But if you're a Houston backer and you laid the 12.5, I mean, if you laid the 8.5, you were livid that you had that type of margin. Yeah. You're in position. And then the Texas A&M just obviously comes back. They score that 3 right before the buzzer to force overtime. But an awesome, awesome game.
It really was. And credit Texas A&M for coming back, not shooting well. Mm-hmm. I mean, Sheed is really that he, as a defender. Buzz Williams said before the tournament that he could guard anybody on any level, including the NBA. And you could see it the way he played. And they're a different team. I didn't think I had A&M going to the Sweet 16. I thought they would beat Houston. I thought Houston was vulnerable in terms of the injuries, not because they're not well coached, because they really are, and not because they're not a great defensive team, because they really are. But I felt like the injuries that we were hearing that they had within their program was going to affect them. And yet they have the mental toughness to withstand. But, you know, we've got 8 teams of the final of the Sweet 16 or 1 and 2 seeds.
Yeah.
That I've never seen that before, Stormy, ever.
Yeah, if you go through, I want to say, the East and West regions both have their 1, 2, 3, and 5 seeds all in the Sweet 16 there. And it's the first time you talked about it, having those 1 and 2 seeds. The first time since 2019, fifth time ever that the top 1s and 2s all have found their way to the Sweet 16. From a betting perspective, it was pretty interesting the way that rounds 1 and 2 played out, because round 1, you talk about Oakland over Kentucky and some of these big games and upsets that we saw transpire. Round 1 was for the dogs. Round 2 went for the favorites, because those first 2 days, 12 underdogs won outright. It was the most since 2001. And then round 2, we see this massive swing to the favorites, who go 15-1 straight up, 11-5 ATS. Double-digit favorites now entering the Sweet 16, Michael. 15-2 straight up, 14-3 against the spread. So is this favorites run going to continue? I don't know. We got some fun games coming up in the Sweet 16, though. Not except I don't feel I don't feel particularly good for my Aztecs, though, Michael. I'm facing UConn again does not give me good feelings.
Wow. I mean, we said this all week, right? UConn's, after I watched them play, was it Friday night? Yeah, they played Friday night, and how they dominated the first round. You just felt like the line, you know, I know Northwestern, you know, took Purdue to overtime and played well and, you know, played in a high level of competition in the Big Ten. But there's a different level of play out of UConn than there is against anybody in the tournament. And you're going to have to play, not that they're not beatable, but the team that beats them will have to play their finest day, their finest game on that specific day, or else it's not going to happen. Because UConn has that unique ability to have great talent, but they act as if they've never won anything in their lives. And they just play with intensity, and a credit to their head coach, Danny Hurley, who kind of brings this out in them. I mean, he coaches them hard. And what they say today, you can't be nice. Everybody, we're going to Dairy Queen afterwards. No, I'm thinking Hurley's taking anybody to Dairy Queen after the game, right? I mean, they're going hard. And I watched his practices, and I've seen what he does. It's impressive. I don't know about you, Stormy. I don't know if there's going to be a team that could beat them.
Yeah, they look lethal. And it's funny, too, watching the in-game when he does those interviews, like in that opening round game against Stetson. They're up God knows by how much, and he comes over to the interview pissed off because of the little things that his team isn't doing that's championship caliber, that if they want to get to another national championship, they need to be doing. And, of course, they beat Stetson 91-52. They beat Northwestern 75-58. And if you go back to the start of the tournament last year, since that game one of last year's tournament, they're 8-0, winning every game by 10+. The average score is 80-58, and now they're laying 10.5 against my Aztecs here, and I don't have a whole lot of confidence, especially considering that the East region is played in Boston. They're going to have that much more fandom at their back in this spot. My poor San Diego State team that I knew they were going to bounce back against Yale. So this is the thing, Michael. I had a rough go that second day of round one. Like, all of the underdogs that I liked, the one double-digit favorite that I liked doesn't win when all of the other ones are. Auburn was brutal. I thought they were going to beat Yale by 20. Yale ends up putting this awesome performance together, and they win. But I knew, and you know I'm such a San Diego State pessimist. I am a doubter. I knew there was no shot that Yale was going to be able to put that together again. And San Diego State had one of their much better shooting days than we are used to. An 85-57 win for my Aztecs in that spot. But I unfortunately think the buck stops here. And even at that number being 10.5, I don't have a lot of confidence of saying, hey, let me take the points with SDSU, because UConn looks like such a juggernaut right now.
They really do. I mean, they compete at a high level. They play defense. They score. They've got talent. I mean, you know, Duke to me yesterday watching the games, I don't know how you felt, but I thought Duke was, I saw a different Duke team than I'd seen in the past. That wasn't a four seed to me when you looked at Duke. I mean, I don't know, what are they, a two seed or you know?
Four.
To me, I think that they're a four seed. Like, I don't see them, you know, like could they beat Houston? I think they could, but Houston, obviously, the way they play defense and compete. But I just thought, to me, Duke was, you know, incredible, and they took it right to them. I mean, there was never a doubt in that James Madison game. And we talked all morning about how maybe James Madison, you know, they've played against good level of competition. They've only lost three games, Appalachian State twice. That game was over in the first 10 minutes. That was over. And the way Duke was shooting the ball with McCain, you know, the way they were able to just create anything they wanted. I think they were on Sunday, besides UConn, I thought they were one of the most impressive teams. Obviously, Purdue with what they did. But of the teams that are not 1 and 2 seed, I thought Duke was really impressive.
Yeah, to your point, James Madison's no slouch. Like, they've been a good team, and they got walloped 93-55, the final score there. And they've got, you mentioned Houston next, so they're getting 4 against Houston, total 133.5. And I do wonder, because you've talked about it a lot with Houston, Michael, is their depth and the injuries that they've had to deal with. We saw yesterday the foul trouble. And I think that is a spot that could really get Houston in trouble as they try to continue to climb in this bracket.
Yeah, and I think Duke is playing. I mean, look, Duke is, is just that they played at a different level yesterday, and you could see that they were into it, that their talent really shined, and they've got a good blend of young and old on their team, which is, how do you think Bruce Pearl feels today, Stormy? You know, losing to Yale and then watching Yale get destroyed. Like, at least if you're Calipari, you say, well, North Carolina State, that game could have gone both ways with Oakland and NC State, right? It was just down to the wire. I thought Oakland was going to win it, but they didn't shoot as well as they did in the first game. But still, if you're Auburn, that Yale loss has got to be the worst, because you knew, like you said, Yale wasn't going to beat. They were not going to beat San Diego State in the next round.
Yep. You're absolutely kicking yourself. And what a flop it's been for the SEC, by the way, who's 5-9 after winning 9 tournament games last year. Alabama and Tennessee, the only teams remaining, but Auburn, Kentucky, South Carolina, Florida, Mississippi State, now A&M yesterday, all out. And so NC State, meanwhile, the ACC out here, 8-1, them in the Big East just crushing everybody right now after the Big East got dogged and only got 3 teams in. They all still remain. But NC State, can they keep this up? They are the lone double-digit seed remaining in the field, and they get Marquette in the Sweet 16.
Yeah, and Marquette's beatable. I mean, look, let's face it, Marquette's beatable. They got better as the first game wore on, right? I mean, I thought Marquette played well. You know, in the first game, you know, we were concerned about them against Western Kentucky. And then Colorado, which is a good team, they battled through and they come out with a 4-point win in that game. But I think they're vulnerable. I do. Yeah. I think Marquette, maybe now that they're healthy, they're going to continue to improve and go. But I think that'll be a fun game. NC State is no 11 seed. I think that when you can win the ACC like they did, you're better than an 11 seed.
They are cruising, and it has been fun to watch. We'll get into some more college hoops when Thomas Gable joins us in about 20 minutes or so. But we're going to hit the break. When we come back, it is lying season in the NFL this week. All the league's big decision makers and media in Orlando. So Michael's going to read between the lines for us on some of the big quotes coming out of Orlando. We'll be right back.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here's your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Okay, so the center of the NFL world this week is in Orlando, as the league's biggest decision makers have all gathered for the league meetings. A little bit later on in the show, have no fear. Yes, we are going to be discussing some of the rule changes we know have already been passed, some that are still on the docket. But for now, with all these head coaches talking to media, it's lying season, Michael, and I need your help to read between the lines for what some of these coaches are saying. Like, what are they really saying? What is a narrative and what's reality? Because these coaches, sometimes the words come out of their mouth and I do not understand what they're thinking.
Well, I mean, what are they saying? I mean, some of it is like, do they think we're stupid? Like, seriously, of course, but there's no follow-up question. There's no, like, really? If this is what you're going to say? I mean, we have so many examples. I'll fill in the blanks.
Okay, perfect. So our first lying season quote candidate comes from Giants head coach Brian Daboll, who said in a sit-down with NFL Network's Tom Pelissero, you certainly want to have a better record than we had last year, so there's no stone unturned. But here's the kicker, Michael. He drew the line at changing the starting quarterback, said he's excited to get Daniel Jones back. Quote, when he gets back, he'll be the guy. Now, we have heard a lot of things about the Giants quarterback situation lately. The fact that the team is having, or the thought, excuse me, that the team is having buyer's remorse about Daniel Jones. So should we be taking Daboll at his word that Jones is the guy?
If you're a Giant fan and you're believing that, you got to be mad at Daboll. You got to be mad at Daboll, because at Daboll's career, he's 500 with Daniel Jones as a starter. With Daniel Jones as a Giant, he's 22-36-1. Never averaged over 7 yards per attempt. So, like, if you're a Giant fan, you're saying there's no way we're going to keep doing this, right, guys? Now, I'll give Daboll some latitude here, because he can't come out and kill Jones, because he's got him on the books for another $40 million or whatever it is this year. So he can't kill him. So he wants competition. So he's left himself a little bit of some wiggle room, saying there's no doubt Daniel's going to be our starter next year. But he didn't say he wasn't going to have competition.
Yeah.
Right? I know that they signed Drew Locke, but if they draft a J.J. McCarthy or the Bo Nix or somebody, then Daboll could come out and say, yeah, Daniel's our guy, but his contract's up and we got a guy in the waiting. So he left himself some out. you hope he left himself some out if you're a Giant fan, because if he truly believes that Daniel Jones is going to save his career, he will not be the coach of the Giants next year, because it's just going to fall apart. I mean, in 2 years, it's going to fall apart. He's got to know, watching the tape and watching his team, it isn't going to work. When it was optimum, they were 9-6-1 and got killed by the Eagles in every game. Mm.
Yeah, if you're a Giants fan, to your point, Michael, not only do you pay Daniel Jones over Saquon Barkley, who has since gone to a division rival now and will be in that running back room there in Philadelphia, but to know that you're hitched to this wagon, or at least to feel like you're hitched to this wagon, is not a good feeling. The dude had one good year, and got a $40 million a year contract. This past season, in his new deal, Jones had a 67.5% completion percentage, 909 yards, 2 touchdowns, 6 interceptions in a year that was cut short to an ACL. Let's go to another quarterback situation that's pretty interesting. Raiders head coach Antonio Pierce told Steve Wyke, Aiden O'Connell, quote, played his ass off, did a hell of a job in his mental toughness to play in the NFL. Quote, whatever happens and whatever we do, it has to go through Aiden O'Connell. Being honest with you, because he's earned that right. That sentence right there is what makes me quiver a little bit. I don't know what Aiden O'Connell has earned based on what we've watched him on the football field. Neither here nor there. Do we seriously believe that he could be QB1 heading into this offseason, even if the Raiders draft a quarterback, considering they just signed Gardner Minshew to a $15 million deal?
So the follow-up question should have been, Antonio, then why did you give Minshew $15 million?
Yeah, exactly.
Then why did you do that? If that's the way you think, why didn't you just draft one? If this guy's so good and he earned everything that you think he's earned, why did you spend $15 million? Are you kidding me? You signed Gardner Minshew the 2 days in the free agent. That was the guy you targeted. And so to me, it's like, how do you even take him seriously? Like, who is he selling this to? Like, who is he trying to make happy? Aiden O'Connell? Like, I get Daboll's situation. He's got a lot invested in Daniel Jones. Pierce has nothing invested in O'Connell other than a fourth-round pick and 2 more years of a cheap contract. So why is he lying to us? Why is he insulting our intelligence? Like, he brought Minshew in to be the starter, and he's going to draft one, perhaps. And so he's trying to revamp his room. I'm not saying kill O'Connell, but just saying, look, we signed Gardner. We're going to let Gardner and O'Connell duke it out, and we'll see what happens. But to think that he played well last year, when if he would have replaced him in a 3-0 game, he might have won that game, I think that's hard to believe.
Well, and that's the thing. Antonio Pierce's whole vibe and message has been about earning the respect of the locker room and doing right by his guys. And, like, are you getting respect from the locker room by saying that this guy who won largely nothing for us last year, who put us in a tough situation, and did a great job handing the ball off, perhaps we could say that, but I don't know. I don't get it. It's just a strange thing that you would go out of your way to sign a guy like Gardner Minshew and then say that, oh no, Aiden O'Connell has earned that right. That verbiage just feels a little bit off to me. Staying on the West Coast, Los Angeles Chargers new head coach Jim Harbaugh doubled down, maybe tripled down on his affinity of his former quarterback at
quadruple
Michigan.
Quadruple down.
Yeah, quadruple down on J.J. McCarthy. Told reporters he's the best quarterback in this draft in reference to his pro day this past Friday. Said, that was the best workout I have ever seen a quarterback during a pro day, the best throwing day I've ever seen. And to hear coaches and GMs come to me, say great job with J.J., like I predicted, it was absolutely no surprise whatsoever. But there is also the little caveat here that the Chargers have the fifth position in this year's draft. He's also talking to reporters about how he's hearing quarterbacks could go 1, 2, 3, 4. Could he be sending a little smoke so that LA has their pick of the first non-quarterback off the board? Thoughts?
You know what I said on the pod today to Femi? I said, why don't somebody call his bluff? Why doesn't some team call him up like the Giants and say, look, if you want J.J. McCarthy, we'll give you this pick here. Just give us Herbert. Let us have Herbert. You know, let us have them. Now, you know, I think that'll change the tune. But what I do believe is what Jim's saying. He believes this, right? And I went in detail on this on the podcast because Jim is very good at evaluating quarterbacks. You know, years ago when he first started, he was adamant in our draft room to take Tony Romo, and everybody laughed at him. Everybody laughed at him. He loved Romo. Him and Johnny Morton, they loved him. Couldn't get Al to talk into him, but they loved Tony Romo and thought, well, we'll try to get him as a free agent. No chance, right? No chance. So, you know, when he evaluates a quarterback, and having been up there this summer, you know, we talked about McCarthy. This is before the year, before the season, and he knew And he felt then that McCarthy was the best quarterback he had. And he knew it when he had Cade McNamara. And he let that thing play out because he wanted to prove to people that this is what was going to happen. So I think he's talking seriously. And for me, I respect him enough to go back and say, let me keep watching this tape to see what he's seeing. What am I missing? Right? Because too often, Stormy, we evaluate the production, not right. what we're missing. And I think you've got to do that.
And I think so many of us from the outside looking in see that, like, he didn't have to do a lot of things and was that protection as a coach to your quarterback in that spot because he can't do certain things and maybe he is inaccurate. We don't know. Or is it just because you have all of these other things and your priority is winning? And if you have to do X, Y, Z to win, that's all you need to do. So, well, we've got a lot of questions to figure out about J.J. McCarthy, but I know one thing is for sure based on everybody that I have talked to about him. He's going to win those face-to-face meetings. He's going to win all of those conversations. Yeah. So it's just a matter of if you can believe, and to your point, find what we're missing.
And this draft has those guys. This is what makes this draft so appealing, right? There's Caleb Johnson, who has his own kind of persona about him, right? That's different. But then everybody else, Bo Nix, J.J. McCarthy, Michael Penix, Drake May, those four guys are elite competitors, elite character. And that sells. Mm-hmm. Trust me, that sells. And I think that's what pushing them up the ladder, because you take for granted that with their work ethic and their determination and competitiveness, you're going to make them a better player. And sometimes you get into trouble.
Yeah, and J.J. McCarthy, a winner as well, has that pedigree, 27-1 as a starter at Michigan. Sticking with the theme of the draft, Patriots head coach Jerod Mayo said drafting a quarterback is the priority right now, but you have to really be in love with a guy to take him number three. All of the options are still open for us. Is that reality? Like, could Mayo be telling the truth that if they're not really in love, they might not take a quarterback?
Well, he left him an out that he could use the love note. You know, it's not me, it's you. That's why we're breaking up, right? Isn't that how it goes,
yeah,
Stormy? It's not me, it's not you, it's me, right? So we didn't want to take it. You know, look, I think they signed Brissett on a one-year contract. See, I think what you have to do this time of the year is stop listening and look at reality. Look at the reality of Aiden O'Connell. Look at the reality of the quarterback position of the New England Patriots. Look at the reality that they only signed Jacoby Brissett for a one-year contract. Those realities, they're not circumstantial. They're not, you know, something that's just out of the blue. There's a reason for that, right? Mm-hmm. And the reason for that is because they want to draft a quarterback. And they wouldn't have structured contracts that way if they didn't. So I tend to believe they're going to pick one, because if they don't, a year from now, they won't have one.
Yep. Caleb Williams still a -3,500 favorite to go number one overall. You got Drake May as the favorite to be picked at three, -135. Jaden Daniels +170 to be the number three pick to the Patriots. We are going to hit the break. When we come back, Thomas Gable, director of the Race and Sportsbook at the Borgata, will take us behind the counter.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here's your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Welcome back into the Lombardi Line. Michael Lombardi and Stormy Bonatoni with you. We are exactly a month out from the NFL draft, the 89th edition, coming at you from Detroit. Could not be more excited to talk it all over with Dane Brugler, NFL draft analyst of The Athletic, who joins us now on the Progressive Guest Line. Okay, things are getting real. We're a month out. Dane, how are we feeling?
I'm just ready for it to be here. You know, there's so much build up to this. And it's fun talking about it because it's all about scenarios and what could happen. But yeah, hearing that it's a month away will be a lot of fun, because this is a fun part of the calendar. You know, this is all the work's done. Now it's about finding the last little, you know, bits of nuggets of info. The pro days are happening right now. The 30 visits are going on, where teams are bringing in different players for, it could be medical reason, it could be character reasons, just to get to know these guys a little bit better. And so now it's trying to look at the breadcrumbs and figure out where certain teams are leaning. But yeah, it's we're almost there. And so the lead up the last month will be a lot of fun.
Dane, when you go through your ratings and you grade every player and you have a really good player breakdown of all the top players and you write reports on all of them, what has been the one player where you have really liked, where you don't seem to think there's much traction from people inside the league?
I used to think that was Quinyon Mitchell from Toledo, the corner, who just had a terrific career coming out of the MAC. I kept getting, during the season, I kept getting third round grades from scouts. I'm not sure what I'm missing. This looks like a top 25 guy. But then I think what he did at the Senior Bowl, what he did at the Combine, running in the low 4.3s, I think that kind of swayed people. And now, I mean, Quinyon's got a chance to be one of the first defensive players drafted. So it used to be him. You know, there's a couple other corners I really like in this class. Andrew Phillips from Kentucky reminds me a lot of Roger McCreary when he was coming out of Auburn, who is starting nickel for the Titans now. A little undersized, but he's competitive. He's got speed. And, you know, you bet on those guys that at the corner position, guys that will play their butt off and also can make plays on the ball. So I think Andrew Phillips is one of those guys to keep an eye on.
Dane, if there's one player in this draft that has been steamed and talked about like crazy in a positive way, it's J.J. McCarthy, the way that he has climbed people's mock drafts. And we're hearing that QBs are going to go 1, 2, 3, 4, and he might not even be available at 4. Like, where do you sit on J.J. McCarthy right now? And what is every other analyst that has looked at J.J. McCarthy in the past missing for him to get this type of attention?
Well, it's funny because I might be the only person who is lower on McCarthy than I was in the summer. I had really high hopes for J.J. McCarthy coming into the year. In my preseason top 50 back in August, he was, I think, 19 overall. So there was buzz about J.J. McCarthy even before this season. And he didn't put enough body of work on the film for me to give him more than, you know, say a second round grade. But I understand how teams could be optimistic about how what he could be in the future. Mitchie played for an offense that didn't ask him to, you know, just put everything on his shoulder and go down and make plays. But I'm encouraged by several parts of his game. You look at his success rate on money downs. He had a 48% completions on pass attempts on third or fourth down that resulted in a first down. So he was very successful when it really counted. It didn't matter late in games. It didn't matter first quarter. He showed up when it was a gotta have it type of play. And this is a guy that I know fans kind of roll their eyes about the win-loss record for quarterbacks, but teams care about that kind of thing. And you go back to high school, 36-2 as a high school starter, won a state championship, 27-1 as a college starter, won a national championship. And so the intangible factor is something that's going to be that's a huge factor for him going early in this draft. And so, yeah, there's a good chance we see all four of these quarterbacks off the board somewhere in the first 6 or 7 picks. And if it's the Vikings, maybe going up to 4 with the Cardinals, you know, we saw the Cardinals last year trade out of the top 10, then back into the top 10. That's something we could see them maybe do again for one of these receivers. But if a team like the Vikings or the Broncos moves up for J.J. McCarthy, it's a big risk. There's no doubt about it. But I can at least understand where they see the optimism with the player.
And where are you on Bo Nix? There's a little bit of a conflict. A lot of people think Bo Nix will be a top 12 pick in the draft. And there's conversations that teams that run West Coast really like him. He's gotten a lot of attention. Where are you on him?
I'm not as high as others, but I can understand the thinking with him. I mean, this year for Oregon, he completed at least 71% of his passes in every single game, all 14 games. That's not easy to do. Now, I think that offense was very simplistic. They set it up in a way where it was easy for him to make the reads, a lot of screens, a lot of dump offs, and then, you know, try to hit him over the top to Troy Franklin. So, you know, there's a lot to like about Bo Nix, another guy where the intelligence, I mean, I've heard a lot of good character reviews in terms of his interviews and how he presents to teams, just his intelligence of, and he's a 5th-year starter, you know, 2 years or 3 years in the SEC, then 2 years at Oregon, and 2 years in, with 2 different offensive coordinators with the Ducks. And so I think that's something that teams are going to really like the person. And then they're going to look at the tape and say, okay, you know, there's not a lot of bad tape out there. It's just, okay, do you think Bo Nix can be a top 12 to 15 quarterback in the NFL? That's where I'm skeptical, because if you don't think that, then you can't draft him in the top 20 or even really in the first round. So So if you're convinced he can become a top 12 to 15 quarterback, I get it. But for me, I have a hard time thinking he's going to get there.
Dane Brugler, NFL draft analyst of The Athletic, joining us on the Progressive Guest Line. Where do you sit on Marvin Harrison Jr.? Is he a can't-miss prospect as the first non-quarterback off the board, or could a Malik Nabers or one of those other names potentially be that guy?
I think the biggest misnomer with the draft is the word consensus. There's just no such thing as consensus. And it doesn't matter the position. Could be quarterbacks, could be receivers. And I think we've been talking about Marvin Harrison for so long as being that wide receiver one that it just was implanted in a lot of people's minds. But the reality is some teams believe Malik Nabers could be that first receiver drafted. And so it just comes down to preference, what you prefer at the position. Malik Nabers has a little bit more juice, especially after the catch. He's younger. He still doesn't turn 21 until the summer. And he led the SEC in receiving the last 2 years. These are two really good players, and it just comes down to preference. But, you know, Marvin Harrison Jr., I don't think him choosing not to work out, while not ideal, I don't think that's going to necessarily factor into a team's decision about who to draft. Because let's remember, Malik Nabers hasn't even worked out yet. He chose not to work out at the combine, and we expect him to see him at the LSU Pro Day, but that has not happened yet. But I think the bottom line is, regardless, these two guys project as wide receiver ones. I'll never use the words can't miss because it's just there's no upside to using that word. But I think these two guys project as potential number one receivers and two of the best players in the draft who should be off the board somewhere in the first six picks.
Dane, you mentioned the LSU workout hasn't happened. What do you think Jaden Daniels will weigh, and who is your number two quarterback in the order after Caleb Johnson?
Yeah, Drake May to me is still that number two quarterback in the draft. I give Jaden Daniels a lot of credit for all the ground he has made up and the improvements he has made. But I mean, we have to remember too, Jaden Daniels is fifth year as a starter. He's 2 years older than Drake May. If Jaden Daniels came out after his third year at Arizona State, he would have been a sixth round pick. So, I mean, to have that advantage, I think, is important context between when you're comparing these two guys. And with Jaden Daniels, I think he scouts in the spring weighed him at 205. And so I think the magic number for Jaden Daniels would be to get at least over 210. Can he be 210, 212? I think it'll be like a Bryce Young situation where he'll get that weight and then his playing weight will probably be back down closer to 205. But if he can, you know, get it on the record that he's 212, then he'll be in good shape. I think the biggest thing with him is just he needs to prove that he can handle pressure at the NFL level. I mean, you watch that tape and yeah, it looks great, but he's throwing to two first round receivers, two other receivers that'll be drafted next year. And it was about 50-50 when he had to drop his eyes. He was more likely to take off and run than find those second chance throws. And in the NFL, that's just not going to fly. You have to be able to move the pocket and still find the open man. And just the lack of durability, I guess he has been durable, but the lack of build is going to lead to durability concerns with the way he runs the football. He doesn't need to prove how tough he is on every run. And it feels like that's what he's trying to do. But in the NFL, it's going to be more about body preservation than anything for him. But no doubt he's going to be off the board pretty early.
Dane, we so appreciate your time. We ran out of time before the break. Otherwise, I would have asked you to look ahead to 2025 because Deion Sanders had some very pointed comments looking ahead to that draft. Thank you so much and enjoy this next month.
Thanks, Dane. Appreciate it. Great job.
Dane Brugler at DP Brugler on Twitter. We're going to hit the break here when we come back. Step into Michael's office, will you please?
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here's your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Start betting smarter with a VSiN Pro subscription. Sign up on a VSiN Pro annual subscription today. You'll get your first year for only $199 instead of our usual $240 price, but you need to use our promo code Lombardi. That gets you pro access to everything we do for the entire year, which includes our daily best bets with the leaderboard to see which VSiN expert has the hot hand, betting splits to show you where the money and bets are moving for every game, betting systems, premium analysis, 24/7 video access, plus our March Madness betting hub with picks for each and every game of the tournament as the bracket goes on. Remember, use that promo code Lombardi, your first year of VSiN Pro access for $199. You can sign up at vsin.com/subscribe.
Appointments are lined up.
You waiting for somebody in there?
Got an appointment.
And it's not about what you want to hear, but what you need to hear.
It's not personal. It's strictly business.
It's time you and me had a private talk when you're step into my office.
It's Step Into My Office with Michael Lombardi. Mr. Lombardi, we'll see you now.
All right, Michael. Coach Cal stepping into the office here first. Head coach of the University of Kentucky basketball.
Wow.
The Wildcats lose in the first round again, upset by a 14 seed in the Oakland Golden Grizzlies. This is a Kentucky team, Michael, that now has just one NCAA tournament win in the last 4 years. Jay Wright said this past week after the loss that Cal has done the best he can getting future NBA players, but NIL is changing the landscape of college basketball. What's next for Coach Cal after 15 seasons in Kentucky?
Well, I hear Coach Cal, Coach, I hear you talk, right? And I hear you quote that you've got so many lottery picks and so many guys in the NBA, and that is a wonderful achievement. And I think that's remarkable, the talent that has come through Lexington, Kentucky. However, winning is all that really matters. Mm-hmm. It's not furnishing the NBA. You're not a G League team. You're a true championship level caliber team that goes back to some of the great coaches. It goes to Adolph Ruff and all those people that have built this program. And so I think it's going to take a little bit of time to figure out what you need to do to change. And I think this happens to every coach, right? After the New England Patriots lost to the Denver Broncos in 2013 in a game where that wasn't really close, the Patriots had a good season, got to the AFC Championship game, but it was defeated by Peyton Manning, giving up 507 yards in that game offensively. Belichick had to make a decision. What do I do? And he started from that point forward how to alter the team. He no longer realized he could outscore teams, even with Tom Brady. They finished third those 8 years in scoring. They were never lower than eighth overall in scoring, but he had to change his approach. And I think you got to change your approach because you're getting beat, not because you don't have the most talent, because you don't have a team that can play together. And one of the things we love about the NCAA tournament, Coach, is we love flow. And flow can only happen when you get a bunch of players who want to learn and grow and have experience. And I think that's what Jay Wright was saying, that the older teams are always going to beat you because not because they're more talented, but because they can create flow. They've been coached for 5 years. They do all the detail things right. Meanwhile, you got guys out there that have talent, that can do unique things, but they have a hard time doing it for 40 minutes consistently. So you're either going to continue down this path or you're going to have to change your approach. You're going to have to get your team older. And I think it's hard. And I think it's really a tough spot to be in because coaching incredibly talented players is challenging. Eric Musselman had the best recruiting class 2 years ago, and that struggled to win games. Eventually, they got to the Elite Eight, but it's hard. And I think you got to change your methodology of how you want to play and win because you haven't been to a Final Four in forever. Yeah. And you've got great PR, but you're lucky you have that PR because most people would be coming after you.
John Calipari's first 10 years at Kentucky, 7 Elite Eights, 4 Final Fours, and that national championship most recently coming in 2012. His last 4 years, just a single NCAA tournament win. Let's go to the NFL and Drake May, who has been perceived as, through the early draft process, one of the early quote-unquote fallers. Despite the noise, though, Michael, May is still an odds-on favorite to be selected with the number 3 overall pick in the 2024 draft. What should he be focusing on leading up to that April 25th date?
Well, he can't control where he gets picked. He can only control his work habits. And I think the one thing Drake has going for him, and Dane Bugler mentioned this in the last block, he's a young player. And he's 6'4". He's 240 pounds. He's a big man. And he's going to get bigger, and he's going to get stronger. And that weight room is going to be his best friend. And there's a lot of things to like about Drake May. And there's some concerns about Drake May. And I think what we've learned from the Josh Allen experiment is the things that you like about that you can't coach. Remember, the great Buddy Ryan had this wonderful saying. He said, you know, there's a place in football for the little man. It's just not in front of the big man. And Drake May's a big man. And that helps him. And that's going to offset some of the things that he doesn't do really well, which is what Josh Allen's been able to accomplish. He's hard to tackle. He's hard to get on the ground. He can throw the ball all over. I think for Drake May, the only thing he can control is his work habits, his routine, and block out the noise. He's going to have an NFL career. He's going to go to a team that wants him. There's no question. Nobody's going to just turn the card in happenstance. He's not going through the first round like Will Levis, where nobody believes in him. He's got fans out there. All it takes is one, and then he can launch his NFL career moving forward.
Again, minus 135, the number for him to be that number three overall pick. The New England Patriots in that spot right now. How about Shohei Ohtani as he comes into the office here, Michael? It has been a very interesting past week for him.
You need the interpreter? I can't speak Japanese.
Well, he has a new interpreter.
Bill Adie over here. I bet he can. I bet Bill Adie can. You know, he learned that at Northwestern, I bet. Yeah.
I would not believe, like, I would believe it when it comes to Bill Adie. He gets all the tools in the toolbox. But Shohei Ohtani, we know all of the things that have been surrounding him in this gambling controversy with his former interpreter, best friend. He is a very media averse person, but Shohei Ohtani, with a new interpreter, is going to address the media later today at 5:45 Eastern. What will be important for his messaging to come across today, given the impact of what his interpreter is being accused of right now and the story, all the different directions that it has gone?
I think what he has to be is brutally honest and explain exactly how somebody could take $4.5 million out of your bank account and you don't know anything about it, and how you didn't see what was going on, because everybody is suspicious. And so there's no sense in trying to skirt the issue. There's no sense in trying to hide behind anything. Come out and say exactly what you believe to be the truth, and say it forcefully and say it dynamically, so that you have people that understand what you're talking about. Because if there's a little bit of gray, if there's a little bit of uncertainty in your voice, in your delivery, people are going to think that you were involved with this. And, you know, that's, and you claim you're not. And so you're going to have to make sure people understand how this strange event could happen, that an interpreter can walk away with $4.5 million and you had nothing else within your compound to protect yourself. Is this just stupidity on your part, or is just this your business handlers didn't do a good job? I think you've got a lot of explaining to do in that area, and I think it's got to happen. The other thing I think that's very clear is, because some states don't have legalized gambling, you know, we're getting this confused a little bit here. If California would have had it, there would have been a record of who made the bets, who did what, right? But now we're in this shady underground, which has always been a dark cloud on betting, which makes it look like it doesn't belong. And we all know it does, because it enhances the game perfectly when done right. And if you read the Billy Walters book about it, who's a professional gambler, and understanding the ethics that go into this, it's important.
No question. And initially, the story from Mitsuhara, his interpreter, was that Ohtani knew about his gambling problems and was trying to help him out, didn't trust him with the funds. So he sent him directly to the bookie, I guess, in this case. But then later it was come out that from the team and from Ohtani's lawyers that he was a victim of massive theft. So we'll see if we get some answers and we do get some truth telling from Ohtani later on today. Last one here. Kevin Keats, head coach of NC State Hoops. Michael, this team is in the Sweet 16. They went on a remarkable run in the ACC tournament and they keep on winning here in the Big Dance. What should Keats' message be to his team ahead of this weekend's game with Marquette trying to punch their ticket in the Elite Eight?
I mean, Kevin's got the greatest platform to talk about it, right? Because he has two teams. He has two teams. He has the bad NC State team, and he's got the good NC State team. And players love to see the visuals. They love to see when they don't play well, and they love to see when they play well. And he's got to paint a picture. He's got to tell a story. He's got to create a narrative on how we got from A to B. And that journey that's got us to B can't go backwards. We've got to continue along that pathway. We've got to play the right way. And we all know how to play the right way. One of the beautiful things about Connecticut basketball is they're not chasing wins. They're chasing a standard of play. And NC State has established their standard of play. They did it in the ACC tournament, and they've done it in the NC2A tournament. They need to continue that standard of play. That's what they're going after. Forget about wins. Forget about wins, because you and I both know if you play to your standard and your standard's high, you're going to win.
And proven they can beat the big dogs. 5 wins in 5 days, knocking off North Carolina in that ACC tournament championship. 7 wins now in 11 days. They're getting 6.5 points against Marquette in that 11-3 matchup. We're going to hit the break here. When we come back, we're wrapping things up because we have NFL win totals on DraftKings, ladies and gentlemen. Too high, too low, or just right with Gridiron Goldilocks next.